Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. The Strait of Hormuz is still broken, and this week the aviation sector handed us the invoice.
Jet fuel at $152 a barrel average for the year, airspace banned across most of the Middle East, and the earnings season splitting the industry right down the middle between carriers who can absorb this and carriers who cannot.
We're going to get into the bifurcation story. Airlines, manufacturers, defense. And there's a defense earnings signal this week that's worth unpacking carefully.
Plus, Boeing actually had a decent week, and we should talk about why that matters for the recovery thesis.
Let's get into it.
This week's narrative was a stress test that separated capitalized, structurally advantaged operators from everyone else. And the results are starting to look durable, not temporary.
That's exactly the frame. Operationally, carriers with either premium revenue depth or fuel production assets absorbed historically high fuel costs and either maintained or raised guidance, while thin margin operators saw their full-year outlooks deteriorate in real time.
And for investors, the repricing question isn't whether fuel costs are high. Everyone knows that. It's whether the premium carrier's structural advantages are wide enough to hold if fuel stays elevated through year end.
Delta absorbed what Ed Bastian called the highest quarterly fuel expense in the company's history and still reported record revenue, growing 14% year over year with pre-tax profits of $1.4 billion. Premium ticket sales outpaced the main cabin for the first time. First class revenue came in at nearly $7 billion against just under $7 billion for coach.
And United raised its full-year adjusted earnings guidance to $9 to $11 a share, even after spending $5.1 billion on fuel in the second quarter alone. That's an 84% increase year-over-year on fuel spend.
So both of the major network carriers raised or reaffirmed guidance during a quarter, where fuel costs nearly doubled. That's the structural advantage showing up in the numbers.
Meanwhile, American cut its outlook. Their CFO said the carrier gets around 65% of jet fuel from Gulf supply chains.
Which tells you the divergence isn't random. It tracks directly to fuel sourcing, hedging architecture, and revenue mix.
The most important signal this week came from the commercial airline earnings landscape, specifically the divergence in full-year guidance revisions across carriers facing identical fuel cost headwinds.
Operationally, the carriers raising guidance are demonstrating that premium cabin demand, loyalty economics, and fuel production assets can offset even a near doubling of the single largest operating cost in the business.
For investors, this guidance divergence is the clearest evidence yet that the sector isn't monolithic. You're not buying airlines, you're buying specific structural positions within aviation. And the spread between the winners and the losers is widening.
All right, let's run the price action. TSA screened 13.5 million passengers this week, which is down about 1% year over year, and just a tenth of a percent below the three-year average. So demand isn't falling off a cliff. It's essentially flat in historical context, which actually makes the earnings divergence more interesting because it can't be explained by a demand collapse.
Right, volume is holding. The story is cost structure and revenue mix, not whether people are flying.
So, on the airlines, JetBlue was the top gainer in the whole universe, up 11% for the week, with a single-day move of 10.5% on the 28th after earnings.
That's a name that had been left for dead, so even a modest improvement in the Q2 numbers was enough to generate serious short covering. The filings out and the stock reacted hard.
American was up about 2% for the week. Delta and United were both up less than 1%, so the network carriers held in, which, given the fuel cost backdrop, is itself a statement.
Now flip to the other side. Textron was the week's biggest loser, down over 11% for the week, with a single day drop of more than 6% on the 28th after its earnings release. That is a significant move for a defense and industrial name.
And it wasn't alone. Several defense-adjacent industrials had a rough Tuesday and Wednesday. L3Harris dropped nearly 9% for the week, with its biggest single-day move just over 8.5% on the 30th.
The defense primes had a coordinated bad day on the 29th. Northrop, Lockheed, and General Dynamics each dropped 2-4% in a single session, and Kratos fell nearly 10%.
The common pressure behind that coordinated move was the defense earnings season revealing execution gaps and guidance concerns across the sector. The Air Force cargo avionics program termination, after $360 million invested, added to the sentiment that legacy defense modernization programs are under fiscal pressure.
What matters here is not the one-day moves in isolation. It's that L3Harris and Textron both had earnings-driven drops that significantly exceeded the sector, which tells you the market was specifically punishing guidance misses, and not just re-rating the whole group.
On the manufacturing side, Boeing was up about 2% for the week, with a single-day jump of nearly 5% on the 28th. That's the standout positive in the manufacturer category.
And it connects directly to the certification news. Flight testing completed on both the 737 MAX 7 and MAX 10. That's a genuine de-risking event for the program.
Cargo was rough. UPS dropped nearly 8% for the week, with the biggest single-day move down 6.5% on the 28th after earnings. That is a material miss for a bellwether logistics name.
FedEx held in better, down just over 1% for the week. So the cargo pair diverged, which is itself a signal worth noting. The market isn't just selling all logistics, it's differentiating.
On the components and aerostructures side, Hexcel was down over 6% for the week. Howmet dropped about 2%. HEICO was essentially flat.
The real story behind these numbers is that the materials and components suppliers that feed the commercial OEM build rates are trading in a weird tension right now. Airbus posted record deliveries in Q2, 237 aircraft, and Boeing is certification progressing. But the intermediate suppliers aren't getting credit for the ramp because the market isn't sure the production rates can hold given supply chain fragility.
Hexcel is a good example of that tension. The stock is down over 6% on the week, and yet the aerospace composites demand picture from the OEM side hasn't deteriorated. Airbus's backlog just crossed 9,200 aircraft.
The market is discounting the delivery trajectory, not the backlog. Those are different things.
Exactly. And that's where we're going to spend some time in the next segment, because the Boeing certification signal and the Airbus delivery record together tell a more nuanced story than either one does alone.
On Frontier, up nearly 11% for the week, biggest single-day move up 7.5% on the 30th. The 10Q filing was out, and the market responded positively.
Which is interesting context against the broader low-cost carrier pressure narrative. Spirit failed outright, Magna Carter's filed for bankruptcy, Air Mountain was declared bankrupt. Frontier's 10Q showing up and the stock rallying suggests the market is starting to distinguish between the low-cost carriers that have a path and the ones that don't.
And Joby was down about 3% for the week. The warrant expiration notice, those warrants expire August 10th, is creating some mechanical pressure. 14.2 million warrants outstanding at an 11:50 strike, and the clock is running.
The EV tall names broadly had a tough week. Archer was down over 6%. These are pre-revenue stories in a market that is currently rewarding demonstrated earnings power, which makes the timing difficult for the sector.
All right, so to summarize the price action picture before we go deeper, the sector bifurcated along exactly the lines the macro story would predict. Premium network carriers held in or gained. Thin margin carriers and legacy program defense names got hit. OEM recovery plays, like Boeing, moved on genuine certification news. And the component suppliers are in a holding pattern while the market figures out whether the build rate ramp is real.
That's the setup. Let's get into the supporting signals. The Boeing certification news deserves more than a headline read, because when you put it next to the Airbus delivery record, you get a picture of the commercial OEM duopoly that is genuinely more constructive than the market is pricing in, but with a very specific asterisk attached.
Walk me through the asterisk, because my instinct is to be more optimistic here. Flight testing completed on the MAX 7 and MAX 10. Those are the two variants that have been sitting in certification purgatory the longest. The MAX 7 has been waiting since 2021. Getting those across the finish line removes a real overhang on Boeing's delivery mix.
It does, and I don't want to dismiss that. The nearly 5% single-day move on the 28th is the market correctly reading a de-risking event. But here's the asterisk. Certification completed is not the same as deliveries flowing. Boeing still has to work through its production rate discipline, its supplier qualification issues, and frankly, the FAA's heightened scrutiny posture, which hasn't relaxed meaningfully since the door plug incident. The question isn't whether the MAX 7 and MAX 10 can be delivered. It's how fast.
Fair point, but the rate trajectory matters here. Airbus posted 237 deliveries in Q2 alone. That's a record. Their backlog just crossed 9,200 aircraft. The combined order book for both OEMs is so deep that even a constrained ramp at Boeing is accretive to the suppliers feeding both programs.
That's where I want to push back slightly. The Airbus record deliveries and the 9,000-plus backlog are real, but look at what the component suppliers are actually doing in the market this week. Hexcel down over 6%, Helmut down nearly 2%, HEICO essentially flat. If the OEM delivery story were as clean as the headline numbers suggest, those names should be performing better.
The market is discounting the delivery trajectory versus the backlog. You said it yourself.
Right, and I think the market is being rational about that discount. Here's the specific dynamic. Airbus's record deliveries are real, but they've been publicly managing supplier constraints on engines and aerostructures for over a year. CFM International, which is a GE Aerospace joint venture, has been running hard to close the gap, and GE's own insider activity this week is actually instructive here. You had two senior vice presidents executing cashless option exercises in the same week, Ricardo Procacci on the 23rd, Ali Mohammed on the 24th. Procacci sold 1,517 shares at roughly $347.90. Mohammed exercised two tranches, 3,035 shares at $90 strike, 5,061 shares at $69.55 strike, and sold nearly 6,800 shares at weighted averages around $353.
Those are large spread captures. Mohammed's lower strike tranche at $69.55 against a sale price of $353. That's an enormous gain on paper.
It is, and both of these are classic cashless exercise patterns. You exercise vested options and immediately sell to capture the spread. The reason I'm flagging it here is not because insider selling is inherently bearish. It almost never is on its own, especially on fully vested options. But the timing, two senior GE Aerospace executives both executing in the same four-day window, at least suggests these are planned liquidations against a stock that's sitting near multi-year highs. GE was at 361.61 at the open of the week, ended at 360 and change essentially flat.
So you're reading the insider activity as holders capturing gains at elevated valuations, not as a signal of fundamental deterioration.
Correct. And GE Aerospace is arguably the best positioned engine manufacturer in the world right now, given the leap demand picture from both Airbus and Boeing programs. But best positioned and fully valued can coexist. And the insider selling pattern suggests the people closest to the business think the stock is reflecting a lot of the good news already.
I actually think that's the right read. The more interesting forward question for Boeing, specifically, is whether the MAX 7 and MAX 10 certifications change the delivery mix in a way that improves margin per unit. Those are higher density variants with better economics for certain route structures. The MAX 10 in particular has been heavily ordered by low-cost carriers globally.
And that's where the Frontier story this week becomes interesting context. Frontier up nearly 11% for the week, biggest single-day move 7.5% on the 30th after the 10Q. Frontier has Boeing narrowbody exposure. If the MAX 10 certification actually flows through to deliveries on a reasonable timeline, the low-cost carriers that survived the consolidation shakeout, and Frontier looks like one of them, versus Spirit and the other failures, are going to be sitting on relatively attractive delivery positions.
The market is starting to distinguish within the LCC segment, which is exactly what you'd expect at this stage of a distress cycle. Spirit gone, Magna Carter's gone, Air Mountain gone. The capacity that exits the market doesn't disappear from the demand side. it redistributes to survivors.
And the survivors with confirmed Boeing delivery slots for MAX 10 aircraft are in a structurally better position than they were 6 months ago, just from the certification de-risking alone.
Okay, so the Boeing and OEM production signal is net constructive with important execution caveats. Let me shift us to the other thing that deserves a real look this week, because the defense earnings pattern is more complicated than just a bad day on the 29th.
The defense sector repricing is the piece I've been most conflicted about, because on the surface, it looks like a sector rotation away from defense. But when you dig into which names got hit and why, I don't think that's actually what happened.
Break it down for me. L3Harris down 8.7% for the week, with a single session drop of over 8.5% on the 30th, following the earnings release and the 10Q filing the next day. Textron down over 11% for the week, with a 6%+ drop on the 28th. Kratos down nearly 6% for the week, but then Lockheed was up almost 0.5%. General Dynamics only down 1.5%. Northrop down less than 1%.
That spread is the story. The names that got hit hardest, L3Harris, Textron, both had specific earnings execution issues. Textron's aviation segment has been under pressure as business jet demand normalizes from the post-pandemic peak. L3Harris had guidance concerns tied to program timing. The names that held in, Lockheed, Northrop, GD, are all deep in long-cycle programs with multi-year revenue visibility.
The Air Force cargo avionics termination, after $360 million invested, is the macro backdrop here. That's a real signal that discretionary modernization programs are getting cut under budget pressure, even when they're operationally important.
Right, and the RTX insider activity is actually interesting in this context. Troy Brunk, president of Collins Aerospace, exercised 12,600 stock appreciation rights at a strike of $97.65, with sales across multiple tranches at around $210. That's a gross spread of roughly $112 per right. He retained about 8,800 shares post-transaction.
Collins Aerospace is the avionics and systems house inside RTX. If anyone has a clear view on the program environment, which programs are accelerating, which are under pressure, it's the Collins president.
And RTX was actually one of the few names in the defense and system space with positive single-session performance this week, up 2.65% on the 27th. So Brunk is selling into strength after what looks like a positive catalyst, which again reads as gain capture at an elevated price rather than a fundamental exit.
The Kratos Form 4 is also worth noting. Stephen Fenley, president of the U.S. division, sold 7,000 shares under a 10b5-1 plan. The stock had its worst single session of the week on the 29th, down 9.79%. But Fenley's sales at $46.99 and $47.86 on the 27th were executed before that drop, under a plan adopted over a year ago.
So the Kratos insider transaction is genuinely pre-scheduled. Plan adopted May 2025, sales in late July 2026. That's not a read-through on the earnings reaction, but the stock being down nearly 6% for the week and nearly 10% in a single session tells you the market had real concerns about Kratos' near-term program pipeline.
Kratos is a drone and autonomous systems name. The market thesis there has been that the shift toward attritable, low-cost autonomous platforms is accelerating. A nearly 10% single-day drop suggests either the growth rate is being revised down or the competitive dynamics are getting tougher.
Both can be true simultaneously. The long-term direction for autonomous systems in defense is almost certainly positive, but the valuation that got priced in over the past 18 months may have been running ahead of the contract flow. And this week's price action looks like a partial correction of that premium.
So the net red on defense this week, not a sector rotation, not a fundamental deterioration of the defense spending thesis, but a differentiation event where program-specific and earnings execution risk got repriced in names that had been trading on narrative rather than demonstrated contract revenue.
Exactly. The names with long cycle, contracted backlogs held in. The names exposed to discretionary modernization programs or near-term earnings risk got marked down. That's a healthy, if painful, market function, and it actually sets up a more interesting entry point conversation for the names that got indiscriminately caught in the Tuesday sell-off.
And the Honeywell Form 4, Ken West selling 15,248 shares at $243.77, while simultaneously exercising six option tranches at strikes between $181 and $200. That's another coordinated cashless exercise at a stock near its high, same pattern we saw at GE.
Honeywell down 1.1% for the week, biggest single-day move down 2.4% on the 29th. Relatively contained, but the insider selling pattern across GE, RTX, and Honeywell in the same week. Three of the major avionics and engine names all seeing senior executives capture option gains. Does suggest a cohort view that the current price levels reflect a lot of the upside.
Which isn't a sell signal on its own, but it's worth noting when you're building a position thesis on any of those names.
So let me put the divergence question directly, because I think it's the one that matters most for positioning. Is this cyclical positioning or structural differentiation?
I lean structural, and here's why. The names that outperformed this week, Delta, United, Boeing, Frontier, didn't just get lucky on a macro tailwind. They have specific architectural advantages that are compounding. Premium cabin economics, fuel production assets, certification progress. Those don't evaporate when the cycle turns.
I want to push on that, because you could look at JetBlue up 11% and argue that's a pure cyclical bounce. A beaten-down name finally posted numbers that weren't catastrophic, shorts covered, and the stock ripped. That's not structural differentiation. That's mean reversion.
Fair distinction. JetBlue is probably in a different category than Delta or United. The JetBlue move is short covering on a relief print. The Delta and United moves, or more accurately, the guidance raises in the face of 84% higher fuel spend. That's structural.
And on the other side, Textron down 11%, L3Harris down nearly 9%. Are those structural impairments or cyclical earnings misses that get recovered over the next 2 to 3 quarters?
Textron is trickier. Business jet demand normalizing from a post-pandemic peak isn't a cycle problem. It's a mean reversion of an extraordinary demand spike. The question is where the new normal lands. If business aviation settles at pre-pandemic trajectory plus, Textron has real earnings power. If it settles lower, the stock has more room to fall.
L3Harris, I read as more recoverable. The program timing issues that drove the guidance miss are execution, not demand. Defense budgets aren't shrinking. The Air Force avionics termination was a specific program decision, not a wholesale budget cut.
Which brings us back to your original question. The structural differentiators are the premium network carriers and the certified OEM platforms. The cyclical positions are the LCC survivors, the drone and autonomous defense plays that got ahead of contract flow, and the component suppliers waiting for the build rate ramp to materialize.
And the American Airlines situation sits in its own category. Structurally disadvantaged on fuel sourcing, 65% Gulf supply chain exposure, guidance cut. That's not recoverable in 1 quarter unless Hormuz reopens or they do something dramatic on hedging architecture.
The Allegiant financing story this week is actually instructive here. $231 million in PDP facility amendments plus $177.5 million credit facility, both filed on the 24th and 27th, to fund Boeing aircraft pre-delivery payments. Allegiant is borrowing at term SOFR rates to secure future MAX deliveries. That's a bet on two things simultaneously, that Boeing certification flows into actual deliveries and that their route economics can service that debt load in a high fuel environment.
That is a leveraged bet on the Boeing recovery thesis. And at this point in the cycle, that's either very smart or very exposed, depending entirely on delivery execution.
So the base case is structural differentiation is real and widening. Premium carriers, certified OEM platforms, and long cycle defense contractors hold their positions. but the key risk is that a prolonged Hormuz closure pushes fuel beyond the structural advantages of even the best positioned carriers, which would compress the entire sector simultaneously and eliminate the differentiation premium.
That's the right framing to carry into next week. And speaking of next week, there are four things I'm watching closely that will either confirm or contradict the narratives we've been building all hour.
Let's go through them.
Watch Boeing. MAX 7 or MAX 10 receiving formal FAA-type certification, because it will confirm or contradict the thesis that certification progress translates into near-term delivery acceleration and sustained margin improvement for Boeing's commercial segment.
Watch any Hormuz Strait diplomatic developments or tanker traffic data, because it will confirm or contradict the fuel cost trajectory that is the single largest variable determining whether premium carrier guidance holds through year-end or has to be revised down again.
Watch Joby Aviation warrant exercise activity through August 7th, when NYSE suspends trading on the warrants ahead of the August 10th expiration, because it will confirm or contradict whether there is genuine retail and institutional conviction in the eVTOL story at the 11:50 strike, or whether those 14.2 million warrants largely expire worthless.
Watch any additional defense, prime earnings, releases, or guidance updates in the first week of August, because it will confirm or contradict whether the L3 Harris and Textron drops were idiosyncratic execution misses or the leading edge of a broader defense earnings revision cycle that hasn't fully priced in yet.
Those four cover the OEM recovery thesis, the macro fuel variable, the speculative mobility sector, and the defense repricing question. If you're managing a position in any of those verticals right now, those are your inflection points.
And they're not independent of each other. The Hormuz situation touches cargo, airlines, fuel cost, for every name in this universe. It's the variable that overrides everything else if it deteriorates further.
So let's close where we started. Three things the week gave us that actually matter.
First, the premium carrier advantage is demonstrated, not theoretical. Delta and United raising guidance while spending 84% more on fuel is the clearest evidence we've seen that the structural divergence within airlines is durable, not transient.
Second, Boeing's certification progress is a genuine de-risking event, but the distance between certification and delivery flowing at scale remains the critical execution gap, and the component suppliers are telling you the market isn't buying the ramp story yet.
Third, the defense repricing was a differentiation event, not a sector rotation. Long cycle contracted backlog held in. Program specific and earnings execution risk got marked down. That distinction matters enormously for how you think about re-entry on the names that got caught in the Tuesday sell-off.
The week handed us a stress test. The results are starting to look durable. Next week tells us whether the foundation holds.
Thanks for listening to Aviation Intelligence Weekly. We'll be back next week.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice, a solicitation, or a recommendation to buy or sell any security. All data referenced reflects publicly available information as of the date cited. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own due diligence and consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Aviation Intelligence Weekly and its hosts may hold positions in securities discussed on this program. Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.